dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. There's a lot going on in the Middle East part of that war at the moment, and it's high time we visited with a man we haven't talked to in frightfully long, and that is Matthew Brodsky. These days, he is a senior analyst in Wikistrat's analytic community. He formerly was the director of policy for the Jewish Policy Center and edited the JPC's journal In Focus Quarterly. You can follow Matt at MatthewRJBrodsky.com on Twitter. Let me just welcome you, Matt. It's good to have you back. Gosh, there's just so much to talk about. Let's start, if we could, with the visit of President El-Sisi of Egypt to the White House today. As you look at sort of the various tectonic shifts that have been taking place in the region you're so knowledgeable about in recent years, how important is this development, do you think?
The relationship with Egypt and El-Sisi is absolutely critical, and it also comes at a time where there has been a slide back toward a slight Arab state Cold War between them and Saudi Arabia, and we need as many of our Sunni allies as we can possibly get going forward when we're talking about dealing with Iran, when we're talking about Syria and what's happening in Lebanon. So getting on board, getting a strong relationship, which we clearly lacked during the Obama administration, getting that back on track is of crucial importance.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Saudi Arabia. Of course, the deputy crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Sultan, was in town recently visiting again with the president. Interestingly enough, the same time that his ultimate boss, the king of Saudi Arabia, was visiting the Chinese. We saw nonetheless the Trump administration seemingly going to considerable lengths to warm relations with the Saudis as well, to the extent that there seems to be some strained, shall we say, relations between the Saudis and the Egyptians. Does that feature into today's meeting, do you think, with El-Sisi?
I think it depends on what the president is looking for. They both are going to have different viewpoints of what we're appear to be doing right now in Syria, which is basically to put ISIS first instead of pushing back on Iran. That is a more significant problem from Saudi Arabia's perspective than it is from Egypt, from their perspective. However, it is still a big issue. Now, how we can get both sides to essentially agree to a strategy and assure them that this isn't just putting Iran at the forefront or handing Syria over to Iran in the long term, that's something that they're going to have to look at, and we're going to have to make assurances. And these are countries, both Saudi Arabia and Egypt, who they've heard assurances before, and they've seen them broken. There was the famous Camp David summit a few years ago with Obama after the nuclear deal, and this is the type of thing where, you know, talk is cheap.
Yeah,
basically.
Indeed it is. You have been warning for some time, Matt Brodsky, about Hezbollah, the proxy of Iran that has long traumatized Lebanon, that has intermittently been a threat to Israel, that has been active in recent years in helping Iran and its ally Bashar Assad in Syria to stabilize that situation in favor of the government there. You're warning now that there may be an incipient and perhaps terrible war between Israel and Hezbollah. While a lot of people are saying, well, the Hezbollah team has really been seriously degraded because of the combat operations it's been mounting for a long time in Syria. Walk us through that very complex mosaic as you see it right now.
Well, the idea since the end of the 2006 summer war between Hezbollah and Israel, there's always been the idea that there was another round because the war was inconclusive and because Hezbollah was allowed to rearm. They had 13,000 rockets before 2006. Now estimates are that they have 150,000. So the idea has always been that war will happen. The question was when and what would trigger it. Today, there's a newer viewpoint or part of an analysis that is that Hezbollah is now weaker, that they've lost between 1,700 to 1,800 fighters during the conflict. By point of comparison, they lost 1,200 from 1982 to 2000 in their conflict with Israel. And their economic portfolio in Lebanon, the what they are able to provide for the people, has all suffered. And that the thesis there has been that their weakness means that they're going to have to reestablish their legitimacy, and all those roads lead to a war with Israel. Now, while much of this analysis is true, there are two things. One, it doesn't matter if they're weak if no one's going to take advantage of it. And in Lebanon, this isn't 2006, this isn't 2008 or 2013. They run the whole show now. And Aoun, the president, and has essentially given Hezbollah the right and ability to keep arms. He said so explicitly a month ago. So a war at some point is completely in Hezbollah's control and has nothing to do with the Lebanese government. But beyond that, the decision, the strategic decision to go to war, lies with Iran, and it's not likely that they're going to want to send Hezbollah to war today. Could happen, but it's not likely when they realize that as a result of the Iran deal, they will emerge in a much better position as key provisions of the nuclear arrangement begin to fall off. And so they will emerge in a much stronger position in the upcoming years.
So war, in short, is inevitable with Hezbollah and probably Iran. It's a question of, is it in Iran's interest to have that war take place sooner rather than later? You'd argue no. Does that argue that it's in Israel's interest to have that war take place sooner rather than later? Especially that, I mean, the staggering number of missiles and rockets you're talking about, I gather at least some of which can range the entirety of Israel, Matthew Brodsky, makes this very ominous.
Right. And there are reports now that with the Revolutionary Guard's help from Iran, that they've made their own missile factories in South Lebanon. Hezbollah has expanded their border essentially on the east into Syria to take over the Kalamun, the high point of the mountain range, where they're in a much more advantageous position to attack Israel when it happens. So in the game of reestablishing the new rules of the game where one side can attack the other without triggering a full-scale war, indeed it is a very good question as to at what point, if Israel decides that a war is inevitable, then at what point would they decide that it makes sense from their perspective to hit Hezbollah? And that is anyone's guess. One could make the case that it's better to do so now. I mean, it's obviously better to do so now before Iran has a nuclear weapon.
Just very quickly, Matt, we can't do justice to this, but let me toss the question to you in any event. Israel has increasingly been drawn into the conflict in Syria as the Iranians and Hezbollah and others have been increasingly leeching up against its border with the Golan. Do you anticipate that translating into an even greater conflict and to what end?
In short, yes, but Iran has also noticed its own room for maneuver. So it's created this Golan Liberation Brigade recently, specifically so that it's not Hezbollah or in the public considered Hezbollah on the border, which everyone knows
plausible
that Israel has
deniability and all that.
Exactly. Iran would like to have plausible deniability. They have a wide array of different Shia movements, popular mobilization units that they can send to fight in any area in Syria to fight against Israel. Hezbollah is their most important, but it's merely in one tentacle of the entire Iranian octopus that they can use in the Middle East.
Matt, so many different pieces of this, and I appreciate so much your visiting with us today to discuss it and look forward to doing so with you again in the near future. Next up, we'll speak with Jim Mitchell right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.